Today's April 15th. Hope you got your taxes done. Actually, I don't care. Kutch hit home run number 300 Sunday, and the Bucks split a four-game series with the Phils. Let's talk all about it. You're listening to the Bridge to Bucktober podcast. Yins guys, thank you for listening to the Bridge to Bucktober podcast, where we talk all about them Pittsburgh Pirates and that. My name is Josh, and I'm joined, as always, my brother Jake. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Grabbing my baseball.
Yeah?
I just like to, sometimes, you know, I'm fidgeting with something, I can do an ink pen, or I can just grab a baseball, you know what I mean? So yeah, I like to do that.
The pen makes too much noise sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. You click in it. Yeah. I try not to click it. You don't want to do that. Try not to click it, but yeah. Why not a baseball, right?
Why not?
Hey, split a series with the Phils this week.
Dude. And that's what it's. We're one of a few teams that haven't lost a series yet.
Yeah.
And going into that game Sunday, you know, I was a little nervous. I was like, because you're right, my buddy comes up to me. I went to B-Dubs last night or the other night to watch some UFC fights. And he says, hey, how's it feel to be one of like four teams in the major leagues haven't lost a series yet? And the whole time I'm thinking, yeah, but we got Zach Wheeler on Sunday and we're down 2-1 in the series. Mm-hmm. Don't jinx us.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I mean, that's what this team's been doing this year, right? They just don't quit. They don't lay down.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, I mean, we talked about this. I think a lot of people are talking about this. Pirates haven't really played like great baseball and still finding way. I mean, some of the players, I believe, I've heard talking about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We tried to look real quick before we hit record. Like, who actually said that so we can quote it? We don't know. But I thought it was either Kutch or Reynolds, but they just basically said like, hey, you know, we're not playing great right now, but we're still finding ways to win. I think Kutch said it, actually. Still finding ways to win, and like, I don't want to jump out there. I don't need people saying like, oh, you're way too high, right? I don't want to be like, hey, good teams don't do that. I will say this, though. Bad teams don't do this.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's early, so we don't know when you get to the end. Like, is this a good team? Like, we think it is, right?
Right.
But we do know that like bad teams, a lot of times they don't do this. They win when they get on a heater. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But maybe not so much. And I see like at times you see really good things and not, but I think you're dead on, man. Like it's just, you got nervous going into that on Sunday. Zach Wheeler's a stud.
Yeah, he is.
So I definitely was thinking that. And I was kind of, watching the game on Saturday and you kind of let that game get away. I'm trying to think of what it was. It was the Holderman, right? No, Chapman with the base hit, Hernandez later on, right?
Yeah, and then this isn't, Contreras gives it up.
Yeah, and he had Marco Gonzalez with a great one. Yeah, that's what it was. Contreras gives up the base hit. And it's just, you sat there and you couldn't help but think like, man, I feel like we really needed to get this one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I felt like this was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't believe in Mitch Keller.
Right.
But when you go into, let's say Keller throws great, which he did, and let's say Zach Wheeler throws great, which he did, then what you're doing is you're sitting there in the sixth inning watching a 2-1 ball game where anything can happen. And of course the pendulum swung our way and things happened great for us. But in that moment, it's really set up, Jake. It's set up better for a team like the Phillies and the power that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's instant offense. When it's a one run game, it all of a sudden can be a three run game just with a two run shot or a three run game with a grand slam on the other side.
Right.
But typically, those types of games are better suited for teams that have power through and through, like you know, like the Phillies. I mean, I feel like they're built for games like that. And we got the better of them in that one.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that. Actually, go ahead. You had something else.
Yeah, I mean, you got to. Well, no, you're fine. The one that we let get away, Castellanos is the one that ends it off. He's like one of the ones in the lineup I don't want up in the situation, because it seems like the only time he does hit is when it's a pressure moment, right?
Yeah.
Playoffs, all of a sudden he's Babe Ruth or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it's just insane.
He's got a knack for it, for sure.
Yeah.
But he also, I mean, one pitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, we kind of talked through this a little bit, and you're like, I don't know if that's who I would have went to. And we started talking through, like, who the heck else were they going to go to? Everybody else had either thrown yesterday or thrown today. And so there wasn't really anybody left. You know what I mean? If you're going to save Bednar, which I think you do there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially putting him in that situation with the trouble that he's had. And we're going to get into that a little bit today as well. So lots to talk about. But really, all in all, you split a series on the road against a team who expects to be in the mix.
Yeah.
So it's just another test. And you would think, and maybe there's some out there. I mean, I think the problem is that we almost took 3 out of 4. And that's what makes you feel like, dang it, we should have taken 3 out of 4. But a road split in a 4-game series, if you just say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we won 2 out of 3. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit there to like about the weekend. Okay, so as we start to get in, we're going to talk about that game a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the other things, Marco Gonzalez and the rest of the starting rotation and things like that. And we're going to talk about, let's just blanket it to backwards case, right? We're going to talk about that. But first off, we've got two things I think we want to get to right out of the gate. And I just don't want to spend any more time talking about anything other than McCutchen hit home run number 300. Let's go. Let's get it in here. Where's it at? Let's do it. Yeah.
Yep, ooh, I'm dropping my baseball.
Yeah, dropped it.
It's rolling.
I'm really sorry for everyone on the audio side of things.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know why you're apologizing. I'm the one that made the error.
Well, I'm just I'm the one that made the error. April podcasting, right? So anyway, Andrew McCutchen, home run number 300. It's always fun. I mean, I have been glued to his at bats. If I'm not sitting in front of the TV, like if I'm doing something else, it's like, all right, stop what you're doing. McCutchen's up. And I yell upstairs, Katie, McCutchen's up. Oh, okay. Stop what you're doing. You watch the game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just waiting to catch that. And today we were going out to some friend's house, and I watched all the, like, I was sitting here watching the game, and we had already blown it open after Bart's home run, and it was 6-2, and you're like feeling pretty good. And then I was like, okay, let's get in the car. Let's drive out there. We get out in the car, and it's literally like, grab my phone, pull up the game. And I didn't even see the delivery of the pitch. I just see the swing, and then I'm like turning up my phone to hear like the back half of that. This is just me pulling it up, right? And I just caught the 300th homer, and dude, come on. All right, let's get real here, right? You guys are hanging out with us right now. We had just got finished like yelling at the kids to get in the car and go do all these things. And we're just sitting there. You're kind of in that like 30 seconds after saying, sit there and be quiet or something like that. I don't remember what we actually said, but you're sitting in that for a second. And all of a sudden I'm like, McCutchen just hit 300. And then it's like, man, which is, I'm not like a woo. Yeah. Swinski hit the grand slam earlier in the game. And I was like, let's go, really loud. You know what I mean?
So I was at work, and I got the notification on my phone that Swinski hit the grand slam. I'm just behind the ice cream counter. Yes, let's go. Everybody's looking at me like, what are you doing? But then I get the notification that Kutch hit a home run. I'm like, no way. Hey, I'm going to the back real quick. Went to the back room, like brought it up on MLB TV, rewound it. It was just like, dude, and even, I already knew it happened.
Yeah.
There's a bucket sitting right beside me. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's been
just super excited for him, man.
100%, dude.
Good dude. Just class. Did you see after the game, a Pirates fan caught the ball mm-hmm. and it was a kid. He just wanted to give it back to him. Like,
really let me ask for you any... Well, let me ask you this. Because, I mean, sure. This is worth a discussion, and there's people out there. They've got their own opinions and all that stuff. You put yourself in those shoes, right? You catch the home run ball. What are you doing? Before you saw what this guy did, you've probably answered this question before, but what are you doing? What's your thought process?
I mean,
do you throw it back? Do you do what they did where they're like, I want to hand it to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you asking for anything?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he deserves it. He hit it.
Right. It's his ball.
Yeah. It's his ball.
Yeah. Some of the people were like, you don't have to ask for anything because they'll do it anyway.
They're going to give you something.
They're going to, right? And so I've always kind of said, like, I don't care. Like, it's his ball. What's it mean to me, right? Unless I'm going to try to make money off of it. And that's ridiculous to me.
Right.
And I understand that there's some people that don't think it's ridiculous, and that's fine. You know, you can think what you want. But like, for me, I'm just like, what? I would just happen to be here. Like, I just want to make sure he gets it. I think what I do maybe is I'm yelling for somebody, right, on the field. Like, if it's Marsh in left field, hey, Marsh, get this to Kutch, something like that. Or I wait till the Pirates come out and I yell for, I think Swinski was in left, hey, get this to Kutch, one of those things. I don't need to meet him. I feel like a lot of times those are awkward. Especially like if it's a kid, that's one thing. He spent all the time with the kid, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not going to talk to dad. It does make it awkward. And some people, you know, they said, I saw Ethan Houlihan said, I'd give it to an usher and say, make sure it gets to Kutch. And it's like, okay. Like, he just basically says, I don't even want any, you know what I mean? And he said the same thing. It's going to be an awkward meet and greet anyway. And you know what I mean? I guess the point is, I've always said that. I've always said, no, he gets the ball back. Mm-hmm. 100% he gets the ball back. And I don't care to have anything in return. I don't know.
I think the awkward comment, I think it's only as awkward as you make it.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. I think I just, quick little interaction. Hey, bud, I think this belongs to you. Just flip him the ball.
Hey, bud.
You know what I mean? Just shake his hand.
Hey, bud, you going there? Hey, bud. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, bud. Funny, I'm running into you here.
No, didn't say that.
I know.
Come on,
I'm just kidding.
No, I just think you just make it casual. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You put these guys up on a pedestal sometimes, and it's just like, dude, he's a human. He's another person.
Yeah.
He's just cooler. He's just cooler than me. That's it.
Right. No. Yeah.
Thanks, bud. No, but seriously, I would appreciate, like, here's what you can do in return, whatever. Shake my hand. Give me a handshake. I'll give you the ball. And you know he's going to give you something. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
But you're going to get something in return, whether you want it or not.
But I think I think if you throw it down to a fielder or something like that, or you walk your way over behind the dugout and, hey, Kutch, here, this is your home run ball. Something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
to me,
I just don't throw it back out onto the field to anybody because I don't want thrown out of the game.
Well, you won't if you're doing that. They won't throw you out of the game for that.
I personally just wouldn't take a chance. Like, I'm not doing it.
Sure. I mean, that's kind of one of the things. I just think it's interesting to hear, you know, what some people think because, like, you know, you have your opinion on things and other people have different ones. I don't think it's a universal thing what people would do. Personally, there's nothing that you can, like, I don't know.
I definitely am not giving it to an usher because I don't know how sketchy that usher is.
That's actually a fair point. You know, do you trust the usher? That's really funny. I didn't think of it that, but yeah, for me, it's like, I want to make sure he gets it. Maybe the play is, all right, I'm out of here. I'm going to walk over and I'm going to get his attention and toss it down to him. And then, cause that way I feel like he's not tempted to give you anything. You know what I'm saying? Like if I say like, oh, I want VIP treatment down below outside the clubhouse, he comes out, we do this exchange, he's going to have something for me. And I'm just like, I would rather just be like, this is your home run ball. I caught it in left field. I just wanted you to have it. And I wanted to be the one to give it to you without making it that like formal. I don't really know. It's funny. We think about this stuff, but until you ever do it,
right?
Like until you're ever there, you don't really know. I always think.
I think it's different for me too. It's different for me if it's my guy or if it's another guy.
Oh, 100%. We'll play the Phillies, right? If it's Ryan Howard's 300th homer, I'm just like, yeah, here, you can have it. Give it to him. I don't care how it gets to him. I don't want it. You can have it. It's yours. I still feel that way, but I don't feel like I need to make sure he gets it. I'll just trust whoever the next person is. Yeah, sure. You want to give it to him? Go ahead. Here, you caught it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Anyway, I didn't mean to throw us off on a side tangent on that, but
it's fine.
Yeah, 300, man. He did start off slow. He started off slow, and that's kind of, you know.
That's a joke he made.
What's that?
Isn't that the joke he made when you go into the clubhouse?
Yeah.
It's been a sucky April.
It's been a sucky April for me, but good luck the rest of the way. I'm going home. He did say that.
It's funny.
Yeah. No, I just, I wish it would have happened in Pittsburgh. Philly, probably the second best place for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his years in Philly were better than any of the other places as far as like,
outside of Pittsburgh.
Even though he was injured most of the time there with the ACL injury. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like that was kind of the next best place for it to happen.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
As far as the series goes, man, we got one more thing. Kudos, Kutch. We got one more thing. I got a question for you. Friday night, we had a save by David Bednar.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you, not in his words, but I'll ask you, as David Bednar, quote unquote, back.
I mean, he looked good. He had control. You know what? Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm still watching it.
Yeah.
Because I still hold my truth that the outing before the really bad one, he missed one pitch. And that outing looked good too.
Yeah.
Other than one splitter left up in the zone.
So you told me in my words, not his.
Now in his words.
And because what I seen, he gets the final out, looks at Davis, says, I'm back. He's got all his confidence back.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for the Renegade to come and shut the door time in and time again.
Yeah, I think, nail biting watching that inning, mm-hmm. you think? Like, were you?
A little bit.
I was nervous, I think, mm-hmm. because he was there and it was like, you know what I mean? I'm a little bit nervous because of what we just saw.
Mm-hmm.
And with every pitch, you started getting a little more convinced. You know what I mean? I think it was important that Shelton never wavered and just said, hey, we saw what we saw. We looked it over. We feel like we had a minor thing to correct. Felt like we corrected it. I think it was Alex. I think it was Alex Stump that put up the video or the graph from Baseball Savant that shows his release point. And his release point for his pitches on that Tuesday game, there was like a spread, right? They're obviously close to each other, but it was a spread.
Mm-hmm.
And the release point on Saturday was, I mean, they were all right real close to each other, real clustered in real close. Yeah. And it just did show that his release point was so inconsistent on Tuesday that it does kind of make you feel that Stephen Brault nailed it, right? But like it was kind of erratic. It was all over the place, which meant, I mean, you know how important that release point being consistent is, not only for the shape of your pitches, but also, you know,
disguising your pitches.
Yeah. If you're looking for hitters to see certain things, mm-hmm. I don't know that, you know, one inning is really going to do a whole lot with the hitter part of it, but it certainly does a whole lot for shape and accuracy and release point and things like that. That's just really important in that scenario. Yeah. And so I think that's a big thing. Obviously, though, when you say it's something like that, that's where I say, I just want to make sure that it's also consistent the next couple times out. So
and that's fair.
I was on, you know, I'm on, you know, on the reaction as well on Tuesday saying, I think Chapman needs to be your ninth inning guy for a week or two. You know what I mean? Like, let's get him right. I still trusted it, like, you know, believed he was going to be fine. He's a great pitcher. And I didn't think that that was just going to miraculously go away. But I was okay saying, we should have eased him into this. And then, I don't know, man. When you started watching that, it was just kind of like, you know what? I think this, you know, hindsight's 20/20 in every single situation. And the more we thought about it, the more, we talked afterwards to say, like, maybe you just stick it out. Like, if you think, and I think I even said this, maybe I said this on our show Thursday, or maybe it was on the fan forum, but I said, it depends on what happens between Tuesday and his next outing behind mm-hmm. the scenes. If they feel like they've got a wrap on things and they say, no, he looks good, then he'll go out there for the ninth.
Yeah.
What I really would have liked is to see him take the mound on the ninth of a big lead and just kind of like, all right, now just close the door in the ninth, even though it's not a save situation. That would have been ideal to me, to keep him in the ninth, but not maybe without a save situation. But this was a 3-run lead, so about as good as you can get to still get a save. It was convincing as it could be. One yeah. strikeout, but like he does that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very good sign. I think that, yes, this team is winning, and because of that, we maybe overreact a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what it comes down to for me, and I think he's going to be all right. I don't know that he's back, though, because, like I said, he looked good the one before that was really sloppy. So, you know, he's got to look good again. He's got to look good two or three more times, right? And then I think we just say, yeah, this was no big deal.
Yeah, just a blip.
Yeah. So that was Friday night, not Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That was Friday night. Saturday's game, the game we lost, this was the Marco Gonzalez start. 3 walks, 5 Ks, 2 runs, 6 hits. He was good, though. His changeup was kind of like, I felt like his changeup looked the best it had this year. He said after the game that everything felt the best that it has so far. Like, that everything felt really good. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk in a minute about how he woke up with arm discomfort and he's on the IL. Chapman comes out, walks 2 guys, gives up the base hit, and blows the save in the 7th. I mean, but it was, right, it's a save.
Right.
As we have the lead. Blows a save. Holderman comes in, gets out of the inning. Hunter Stratton, clean inning, 2 strikeouts, really good. But you are, you know, you're going into, where are we at here? Because it was 3 runs, right? All the way to the 9th. But I feel like we were about there, weren't we? In the top half of the 9th, did we have some? No, top half of the 9th was simple. The 8th? No, basically we didn't do anything. Yeah, we didn't do anything after that.
Yeah.
Just really quiet. You got into that 9th inning. Jose Hernandez comes out. Schwarber single. How about that guy with lefties right now? What in the world?
Right.
Trey Turner walks. They put in Whit Merrifield to run. Harper strikes out.
Time out.
What?
Were you actually watching the game at this point?
Yeah.
Schwarber gets on base and just goes.
Oh, that's hilarious. I didn't notice he did that.
It was like a slow pitch softball move.
Yeah.
All right, I'm on. Get the runner.
Get the runner. Courtesy for the DH.
Dude, I was cracking up.
That's funny. Harper strikes out, and then they make the move 100% every single time. I would have put Harper on.
I was thinking that too.
Well, let's take it back a little bit, because during Harper's at bat, the ball kicks away, right? First mm-hmm. off, Henry Davis, we probably do need to bring this up, because Joe Block kind of said on the broadcast that the game was speeding up on Henry Davis. And I mean that those balls were bouncing off the ground in front of home plate.
Those were tough.
I feel like there's a, and this is probably a sports fan thing in general, Jake, but I feel like there's a line where we're like, you can't sway from terrible to awesome. There's a median of plays mm-hmm. that you expect people to make. On the plays that you expect people to make, if it swings down, wow, that's bad. You got to make that play, right? But that's on a play that you expect them to make.
Mm-hmm.
In order to have something awesome, it has to be a play that you don't expect them to make, or else it's not awesome. If they make the play, it's a play you expect them to, and they make it, you say, good job. You made the play that you were expected to make.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's those plays that you don't expect them to make. If they don't make those, it's okay. If they do, it's awesome. There isn't anything that swings from awesome to awful. Like that, that can't exist. It's either a play you expect them to make or one you don't. So you can't have a play you're like, oh, there ain't no way he gets to that. And then he doesn't get to it and go, you stink. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that. You didn't expect him to make that play.
Yeah.
These were plays I didn't expect him to make.
No.
If he does make this block, it's like, wow. Especially because that's individual, right? We're talking about Henry Davis, a guy who maybe we're not fully confident in back there.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You had a thought.
I will say that he did say that after the first one, right? No, he said it after the second one.
Go ahead.
But I think part of what he meant was like, I mean, he made that first block, right? And it was actually a very good block. And I was like,
he just didn't know. Oh,
he blocked it. And it went in front of him. He probably should have been able to see that. He just kind of jumped the gun and assumed it went to the side. You know, you gotta, and that's a little bit on Hernandez too.
I think those PFPs, guys get that base anyway.
I don't think they go. If he knows it's in front of him, I don't think he goes.
Okay.
Because he hesitated.
Merrifield going to third base. I go to third base every time.
When they showed it from the angle behind the pitcher, he wasn't running. You could see he was not running until Henry went to the other side. And the reason I say it's a little bit on Hernandez, not even the pitch. Like, okay, he blocked it. You need to point and yell in front, in front, in front. You know?
Yeah.
Pitchers, we went over that. We go over that in the spring, right?
Yeah.
It's part of PFPs. Everybody does it a little bit differently. I don't know how the Pirates do it, but you got to try to help your catcher out. You made a bad pitch. Help him out.
Okay. So either way, he says that after Davis kind of throws it away. The second one kicks away. Yeah. Davis throws it away. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. But as far as like the two blocks, those are really tough pitches. But anyway,
they are
at
tough.
That point, I'm walking Harper. I'm walking Harper and I'm going to the pen. Is that right? Who was up next?
Boehm, I think.
Alec Boehm. I'm pitching Alec Boehm. You know what I mean? I know it is what it is, but you need, but it doesn't matter. Your base is loaded, nobody out. You need a strikeout or a pop out. It doesn't matter who's up. You have who you have. You put yourself in, as a team, you put yourself in this situation. So anyway, he ends up getting the strikeout of Harper, which I'm just like, hey, and I don't care. It doesn't matter how good Alec Boehm, you're going to get a righty anyway. Yeah. Harper was the third hitter. You're going to get a righty, so it doesn't matter. And you got to, basically at this point, you got to come up with a miracle. Well, the first miracle was they did get Harper. and as bad as he looked, I'm surprised. Although Harper did swing at the first ball in the dirt, I'm not sure what he was seeing.
Yeah.
Unless he was trying to hit it off the bounce, I have no idea why he was swinging. Like, it was so bad.
Yeah, it was a bad pitch.
So anyway, easy decision to walk Boehm. That's going to happen. Now you got one out. You have to walk him.
Yeah.
And then you just got to, here's the thing. You bring in Roansy. What's your thought process? Are you thinking ground ball or are you pitching for the strikeout? Because you know that even a ground ball, you need to get lucky to get the double play and all those things, right? You've got Castellanos up at this point. Boehm's at first. Doesn't matter. Merrifield's at third's the only one that matters. Are you trying to get Castellanos to roll into something or are you trying to strike him out?
I'm trying to get him rolling to something because he's not fast.
You had Stott up next.
Yeah. I'm trying to get him to roll into something because you can turn that double play easy.
Anything doesn't sneaks get through. Right. That's the thing. So pop-ups are easier if you're – really, he throws one pitch. It's 95, but it's in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to swing hard. all he needs to do is just touch it.
You have to light up the bottom of the zone. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm there too. I would have started with Ronzi's slider. I would have started with the slider there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm going fastball. I get it. If Ronzi's not a ground ball guy, I do get the idea of saying like, hey, we need a strike out here. If that's what you're thinking in your head,
sure.
He's your only guy you're going to.
I'm going slider fastball though. I'm not yeah. starting him off.
If I get to two strikes, then I'll go upstairs, right?
Mm-hmm. Above the zone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm there. You want him to pop it out to the infield.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got two outs, then you can just pitch. And if mm-hmm. he hits a fly ball, that's fine. We'll catch it. But as soon as that ball went in the air, like I was actually kind of surprised to see Jack Suwinski even, he wasn't trying to catch it, but he was just running backwards. And I'm like, that's the wrong way. If you catch that ball, he still scores. Just go into the dugout.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But either way, it's kind of, you know, set up to fail at that moment, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of the one where you're just like, dang, you just kind of gave it to him in a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially with the walk. Then again, it's, you know, Trey Turner. You're trying to be careful right. with him too. So, go into Sunday. We'll get back to that one, but let's, you know, going into Sunday, feel like this is the Kutch home run. This is the Jack Suwinski grand slam. You got Zach Wheeler dealing 10 punchies and Mitch Keller. 7 innings, 8 hits, 2 runs, 4 Ks. Just another.
No walks.
No walks. Back to back good starts there.
Yeah. That's important because he did have 3 walks his last outing.
Yeah, and
which was still a good outing.
Yeah, but do you kind of see though? He had what, 9 strikeouts?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. And then so the walks kind of come with the strikeouts. And this one he only gets 4 strikeouts, but he doesn't walk anybody. He's pounding the zone. He was efficient. He had them off balance. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit there where he was just, you know, when's that complete start where he has the 9 and the 0? You know, and it's fine. He's doing good. Yeah. You know, it depends on what you have. Trey Turner was just awesome too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you got guys like that, it's so many guys in their lineup can be the guy that day that can be the reason why they won. And it looked like he might have been that, but not in the end. Right. Not even in the 6th. Jack Suwinski grand slam. What a sequence there. I mean, 5 innings, 10 strikeouts, Zach Wheeler just absolutely dealing. And then you go into that 6th inning. He'd already thrown more pitches than he had thus far in a start, right?
No, I don't think.
Not more pitches total, more pitches that far into the game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. More like after 5. I think that, mm-hmm. you know, he was more than he'd been after 5 in his other starts, gotcha. Is what I meant. Yeah. And then you had Key Bryan on the fielding error, reach base, which was basically just the ground ball that kind of hopped on Boehm and had a glove on it. They called it a hit in the game. I'm just reading this right now and it says fielding error. They did call it a hit live. Really? They've went back and changed it apparently. Because Block said that it was a hit for now. I didn't hear him say that they changed it. Anyway, maybe I missed that.
They have, what, 36 hours?
Oh, they went back a week and a half earlier this year and killed What's-His-Face's on-base streak.
My gosh.
And I watched the play, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of still think it's a hit. I don't know what we're doing here. Anyway, Telez walks, moves Key Bryan up on a 8 pitch at bat, fouls off 3. Once he gets to 2 strikes, really good at bat by Telez. And then Kutch hits the single to center. You got the bases loaded. And all of a sudden you're sitting here, you've got him up around, you know, 95 pitches or more. Suwinski, how many pitches was Suwinski? Just 2. So you've got him at 98 pitches now. You've loaded the bases. He doesn't even have an out in the 6th yet. And the curveball low and away, and Jack cuts it. Just a line drive.
Mm-hmm.
Like to see the RPMs on that. Because he like backspun it, right? He cut it like a slow pitch softball pitch. And it just stayed in the air. Yeah. Grand slam. J Jack Swinski, big time swing right there. It just changed the game, and then it became a blowout after that. Joey Bart adds a home run. Kutch adds his number 300. 9-2 win for the Pirates. Zach Wheeler is 0-3, but he's even after we put a 5 spot on him in 5 innings, he still has a 3 ERA. They got to figure out winning those games.
Right.
However, let's go ahead and get into this a little bit. Because all game, and really all weekend, Jake, I was all over the place looking this stuff up because I'm like, what are we doing with these caught third strikes? Looking on for third strike. Like, we have got to start pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
There's been like 5 bad calls.
Yeah. Okay. So there's been the hitters for
5 balls outside of the zone that have been called strike 3. I didn't dig into all 5 of them. The one Triolo had today is not a pitch you swing at. Some of them could have been like, hey, you got to protect. Right. So I'm going to leave that there to say you could still criticize maybe some of them. I didn't look at what the pitches were. So I think it's fair to say, I know off the top of my head that there's been at least 1 or 2 O'Neill Cruz low pitches that he shouldn't swing at that have been called strike 3. I think there was one on McCutchen that was off the plate and was never on the plate. But other than that, I don't know what the other one is. If I'm right about all those. But anyway, if they're in the zone, they're top 5. Not top 5. Bottom 5, really, right? The top 5 in the number of times they've caught looking.
Yeah.
And I understand that this is an approach that's taken by the majority of Major League Baseball teams. This is not, I say this all the time because I think it's important to know that, like, we are not the outlier in this scenario, right? This is a common practice, this type of plate approach. And it's an effort to get the starting pitcher to throw a lot of pitches, to move him to a place where he's going to make mistakes. I would actually say that the curveball low and away in the zone to Jack Swinski was probably not a mistake. I actually think he probably likes that spot.
Yeah.
But, so that doesn't help my point here. It's not really even my point. I personally don't love this plate approach. Not for everyone, right? There are guys I think it suits. Jack Swinski actually is one of them. And he didn't do that in this at bat. He swung at both pitches. Mm-hmm. I would like Jack Swinski to go back to where he was being more patient and waiting for his pitch to hit. And I would be honest with you. I think he was just thinking this is a double in the gap. I don't know if he thought he was going to hit that ball out, but
right.
You know, but either way, just to continue moving here, this is an approach thing that the Pirates are seeing more pitches this year than anyone else. And they're not really even at the top of the league. They're like 13th in the league in just taking strikes that are over the plate. You know what I mean? There's 12 teams that actually take more strikes than they do. And that's by percentage, not by number, right? Because the fact that we've seen the most pitches, obviously our number's probably like, I think it's like the 7th highest. But when you look at the percentage of how many pitches are thrown in the zone, how many pitches we look at that are thrown in the zone, that percentage is like 13th highest. So it's really not even as much as some other teams. But we've done a really good job this year of wearing guys down. And I think that it's attributed, and like I said, I'm not a big fan of it. However, the more I look, the more I see that this is really attributed to the reason that this team is finding ways to win games. Because early in this, like the first week and a half, I kept saying, hey, with 2 outs, this team is scoring a lot of runs. They're seeing a lot of pitches with 2 outs. They're not going away. They've got the second best batting average in baseball after 2 outs, the Braves being the top. Now, I don't know where that stands now. It's been about a week and a half since I looked that up. But the fact is, early on, this is how they were winning games, was with 2 outs. And the reason that you do that is because they're getting, like, in those innings that they do that, those are innings where there's guys on first and second, and maybe one of them drew a walk. And maybe they've had a lot of pitches. And a pitcher's out there saying, will you guys go away? and they just won't. You know what I mean? Yeah. You expect the inning to be over and they just won't let it end. And that's what was happening. And I don't know, like I said, how that's held up. That'll be something I'm sure I'll be looking up. But the point is just in this game, you got Wheeler to a point where his 100th pitch was with nobody out in the sixth inning and you had a grand slam and chased him out of the game. And that's the piece that I feel like needs to happen in order for this plate approach to work. If you don't hit that grand slam, you're just striking out for no reason. You know what I'm right. saying? And that's the piece yeah. where I'm like, hey, the Phillies get away with this because they had a bunch of bombs.
Yeah, and I obviously, like, we talk about this, and the plate approach is never to strike out looking, right? The plate approach is to see pitches.
Yeah.
And that's on the hitters. Like, the hitting coach doesn't strike out.
Yeah, I think the way I said it was like the Andy Haynes is never in there putting the take sign on with two strikes.
Sure, sure. And it's just like, in order for the hitting approach to work correctly, the hitters have to execute.
Yeah.
So with two strikes, you want to kind of what they call protect the plate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's guys on the, like, the ball's like the sinker to Triola. Like, you don't expect him to protect the plate with that.
Right.
It was never a strike and it never made it back. Like, I'm not upset about that. That's, come on, Blue. Come on. And you move on. So the taking for strike three needs to be cut down, but taking pitches, like the actual approach up until that point, has been executed pretty well thus far. And it's, the strike threes are just
too much.
Too much.
Too much.
You gotta, what they say, you foul off a pitch you don't like. I mean, no one does that on purpose, but
well, you try to.
I don't
to,
care what
right?
you say. Yeah, you try to. You try to fight it off, do something. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, you can't get caught looking that much.
Over and over again. And we talked a little bit about, you and I talked a little bit about O'Neal Cruz and some of his pitches he's getting stuck on. He's locked there, away, and then he busts the sinker up and in. It was over the plate enough that I felt like, man, you got to be ready for that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like Cruz is kind of he's kind of out over the plate right now because he's getting worked away so much. And I think if more pitchers see that he's not hitting the inside pitch, he's going to start getting hammered inside. And so I think that there's some time before we see him really bust out, to be honest with you, because I think he's going to have to keep adjusting, and it's going to have to be, if they start throwing him in, if he's not able to turn on it, then we've got another week or so of him struggling still, because he's, you know what I mean? I just,
yeah.
we need to see him. This is why last year was so important for him, and missing last season is going to, we're going to have to be patient with Cruz in that sense.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I'm with you, man. And there are pros and there are cons to this hitting approach. And the obvious con is that you do get to two strikes a lot. And if your lineup is not good enough to shorten up and say, okay, now that I'm here, I need to protect and just, you know, not big swing it, but try to put the ball in play. And I think, sure, there's scenarios where it's fine. If there's nobody on and two outs and you want to take a big swing with two strikes and strike out, I'm actually okay with it. I'll take the strike out there, because what you're asking is for you to put the ball in play and then two more guys to put the ball in play so you can score. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. And
there's holes in that. There's holes in what I just said, but sure. I admit that.
And the downfall of this hitting approach is getting, like you said, you're getting yourself in that two strike count. And what you're allowing the pitcher to do is he's putting you in that rocking chair, you know, the proverbial rocking chair, right? And he gets to dictate your at bat at that point. And that's the, you know, you get O'Neal Cruz away and you get him in that two strike count. Now you can bust him in and he's going to
flinch
up
and just lock up and take strike
so
three.
So you are allowing the pitcher to get the upper hand at times. So it's difficult. And I don't think your entire lineup should be doing it.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're speaking in general terms here because we don't really know that O'Neill Cruz didn't swing at two pitches in that at bat. Right. But you know what I mean? But like, it's just happening, right? He also went after a first pitch sinker and hit a home run in this series.
And we keep just defaulting using him.
First strike. Yeah, we do keep, you know, he went ball one, unfair. Ball two, and swung at one and hit a home run. But, nothing's across the blank, across the board. You know what I'm saying? We've got guys that can't hit strikes. You know what I mean? So I just think that you have to execute, and I'm just not sure that we have enough proven players that this is a great move to do from the beginning to the end of the lineup, because as much as I love the talent that we have here at times, they're just not enough proven to say we can do this because we're going to knock our home runs. Like, this is a team who's been in the bottom half of the league in home runs forever. It feels like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So we're just not big boppers. And I think that this type of plate approach just works better for teams that have instant offense.
Yeah.
That can chip away at leads by hitting the ball over the fence. And until they start showing that, I'm going to continue to be frustrated with this approach, even knowing what I've looked up and knowing that it has paid off to this point.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that when you get a guy that went up against them on Thursday who just pounds the strike zone, you're going to look up at the scoreboard and say, crap, we've got two hits. It's a sixth or seventh inning. And he's still out there. Like, he, you know what I mean? He stayed out there because we're trying to hem-haw around and we're not chasing him out of there. So I think there are times that you need to know who's pitching as well. And I don't know. I don't know. It still frustrates me, but I see the value at this point because it's working for them right now. I just don't love it.
Yeah.
It's because of the backward strikeouts. You're putting yourself in those situations, and I think it has to play there.
Yeah.
It has to play there.
And it's even the swinging strikeouts to me. It's you're giving the pitcher a chance to be the dictator of the at bat.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'm prepared to go that far. You're going to get to two strikes. So I'm not going to sit here and say like, "Well, never get to two strikes. Make sure you shorten up." I don't want that.
Right. Right.
And I think there are times where you swing big with two strikes if the scenario calls for it. So that's just saying, hey, guys, be better. Hit the ball when you swing. And, you know, you're facing a guy like Zach Wheeler. I think that's a pretty unfair thing to say.
Right.
So I don't know.
And I think it's the guys like Ranger Suarez that I'm referring to when I say that, because he just pounded the zone and got ahead. And, you know, he then has the chance to dictate the at-bat rather than the hitters being like, I'm spitting on that. That's a ball. I'm spitting on that. The guys who play with the zone, right? They teeter on the corners a lot, and
you don't want a power guy swinging at a first pitch slider on the edge,
right?
No, take that strike. You want him to go after another one. If you get a guy like Ranger Suarez who's saying I'm going to throw fastballs over the plate first pitch, then you got to start pulling the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got one more thing to talk about, and then we gotta move on here because we're close. We spent more time than I thought. Marco Gonzalez, left forearm discomfort. It's really what we were all scared of. Weird thing is, it's like he felt so good and he talked so highly about how he had the best stuff he had. And then what, like wakes up in the morning and just goes, oh crap, my forearm hurts.
Yeah.
Now they say we're being overcautious. We'll see. They better say that no matter if they're being overcautious or they think it's bad.
Right.
It's just how they talk. And I think that that's fine to talk like that. Some people could have a problem with it. I think you're just being a Major League Baseball team and it's fine.
Yeah.
As far as what they're going to do here, I think it's pretty safe to say at this point, guys, it's not Paul Skenes.
Right.
And I think as a blanket statement, everybody who's recording a show tonight is probably going to say, let's cool it on the Paul Skenes talk. Quite frankly, I think everybody's excited about Paul Skenes and I don't really care if they're pining for him, but the truth of the matter is, well, and most he's thrown so far is 55 pitches.
Exactly.
And so like, he's not stretched out for it unless you want Paul Skenes to come up and be an opener. If that's what you want, then sure, bring him up, let him be an opener. But I'm guessing that most people who want Paul Skenes there don't like an opener.
Right.
So what do you do from here? You've got an off day Thursday. it's a pretty easy button to just say Mitch Keller starts on Friday. He's got 4 days rest. He'll start every fifth day. He's going to start. The rotation can go one more time through on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all with 4 days rest. And then Tuesday's the first day where you say, okay, what are we going to do? Right. Yeah. And that's Tuesday against who? That's Tuesday, the 23rd against the Brewers, right? This is your first time where you have to say, okay, what are we going to do? They brought up Ryder Ryan. Everybody said Ryder Ryan is not Paul Skeens. And I'm like, why would you bring up a starter 4 days before you need him? And then you look at the schedule and you're like, why would you bring up a starter 8 days before you need him when you could use a reliever that whole time and then make a move? And so that's what they'll do. I'm guessing around the 23rd, we'll either see Luis Ortiz be a bulk man or an opener, whatever they end up doing. I could very much see them saying on the 23rd, depending on the line, let's say the lineup of the Brewers has some lefties at the top. Josh Fleming starts. He goes 1 to 2 innings. You give it to Ortiz for 4, and there you go. You've had your bullpen game. You handled 6 innings. Hopefully everything goes right, obviously. That's a pretty blanket statement. Every time somebody's out there, you hope everything goes right. So,
you know
what I'm saying? Like, that goes without saying. Mm-hmm. And then you have a bullpen game. And you can get through that day, right? And then you kickstart that rotation all over again with Keller on Wednesday. And then you go through. And then you have another one on the 28th that you're going to need in San Francisco. A Sunday afternoon game where you could have another bullpen game the same way you draw it up. Ortiz, Fleming, something like that. And you could get through those two games. Now, 15 days. He was put on the injured list today, right? So Monday is 15 days. That Monday the 29th is 15 days. If Marco Gonzalez is fine, then for his next start, you activate him and you go. All you had to get through was two games. Yeah. If you don't like that option, my guess is it's like a Quinn Priester comes up and you see two games from Quinn Priester. But if you bring up Quinn Priester, let's say it's a long-term thing for Marco, and you bring up Quinn Priester, the chances of that Paul Skeens rumored May 3rd, right? Because we just talked about April 28th being that other bullpen game. Then you have the 29th, the 30th, the 1st, and then a day off. So you're saying, like, Saturday would be his next start. Unless you're talking day off, right? But you're not, whatever you're saying. You're talking about that weekend series that everybody's saying, I think Paul Skeens could probably be there the first weekend of May against the Rockies in Pittsburgh. Get me through two bullpen games. If it's long-term for Marco, we go Skeens on May 3rd or 4th, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not long-term, Marco comes back and maybe you do that, maybe you don't. It depends on how good Falter's doing, right? I don't know, man. I mean, they're going to do something. It's either going to be, we're going to see. Now, if you see Priester for two games and he's lights out and Falter's lights out and everybody's doing good, I bet they slow roll Paul Skeens. If everybody's doing good, there's no reason to bring him up.
Right.
Is Falter doing good, Jake?
Listen, I think I said before the show, I said, what? Did something actually click and Falter's actually a good pitcher right now? And he is. He's attacking the zone. He's going after guys. He's not scared. I mean, he's going right after him. He looks like he's got a ton of confidence on the mound. I haven't had confidence in him yet. Even when he's like going good, I'm like, when's it going to fall apart? When's that one big mistake? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, but it's just not happening. He's not throwing a ton of innings. Through 5 innings against the tough lineup. 5 innings against a tough lineup. They gave up a few hits, 4 hits or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
six essentially no hit innings against the Orioles.
Yeah. Yeah. Couple tough lineups and he's navigated his way through it. I'm not buying yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm checking the price.
Checking the price. So with that said, if somebody starts doing poorly or this isn't working out and Marco's a long-term injury, then I think that May 3rd date might make some sense for Paul Skeens. Sure. Otherwise, it ain't going to be before that, I don't think. I think they're going to give it a couple. They're going to try to get away with a couple games, whether they're getting away with it by bringing Priester up or they're doing some kind of bullpen game. You've got Luis Ortiz on that team. You could do Ortiz and even Contreras, although I don't think they'll go there. I think they really want Contreras switched to like a one-inning type guy. So
kind of like a max effort for one inning.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just saying like, dude, you're just a bullpen guy now, and I think we're going to get the best out of you. And so I don't know that he's even like one of the guys that they'd want. But obviously Fleming is. Obviously Ortiz is a guy that they'll go multiple innings with. So you could see those combined for 3-3 or 2-4 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's shown that it can get you through things like that as a spot starter. And if Priester is not doing good in AAA, is that not a better option than going with Priester? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you just need to get through two games. And, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. We'll react at what they do, right?
Yeah.
But we basically said all we needed to say about rotation pieces and what it looks like. And what do you got?
Real quick, I want to just touch on the bullpen a little bit. They've been throwing really well. My problem right now is if you bring in a guy who has to get you out of a situation.
Here it is.
He's done.
Hey, I'm going to start playing the music. Go ahead.
Don't bring him back out for the next inning. I'm so tired of it. You get amped up. You get all your adrenaline going and you get out of that. When you come down from your adrenaline, you're not going to go out and pitch effective the next inning. Just go to the next guy. Please.
I mean, I'm big on that, so I'm not going to argue with you on that because I'm big on the same thing. So they have done more two-inning things that have worked, but what you're specifically saying is that high.
Yes.
When you come down off that high.
You got to come in. You got two guys on. You get out of it. You get two outs to get out of it with runners on.
What if your offense scores four innings after you go back in? Or four runs.
Four innings, that's impressive.
They score four runs, which is what happened, and they put a guy back out there, and it was fine.
You're done.
No, it was fine in that case because he had a time to kind of reset.
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
I mean, that's fine.
Let's get out of here, man. This was a fun one.
It was.
This was a fun one. Let's go, Bucks.
Let's go, Bucks. Congrats,
Thanks
Kutch.
Thanks for listening to my dad and Uncle Jake on the Bridge to Bucktober podcast. Follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Bridge2Bucktober. Don't forget to subscribe so you know when new episodes are released. Clear the deck. Cannonball coming. And let's go, Bucks.